This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
This week on Witness History, we're bringing you programmes about food. The dispute between Japan and South Korea over fermented cabbage. Christetta Comerford tells us how she became the first person of colour to be the top White House chef. And how Hollywood bigwigs mocking British food led to the creation of one of the most popular cookery programmes on the planet. Witness History, the podcast that takes you to amazing moments in history told through the eyes of the people who were there. Search and subscribe to Witness History wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Tak, tak, to pamiętam, bo...
Well, yes, I do remember.
Był roof.
Next to our house, there was this ditch, and the water in it flowed very fast. And Daddy used to put up pinwheels in it. They span around and around, and there were peat bogs with ponds that were so clear.
I tam woda była czyściuteńka.
Once, there was a place Poles call Wołyń. It had wide, wide skies. The fields yellow with sunflowers in summer. The roadside poplars heavy with mistletoe.
I było ogromnie dużo ptaków.
And so many birds.
Bociany czarne, bociany
black storks,
czarne.
White storks, herons.
It also had secrets, dark ones.
In my family, it was always a taboo subject. What I know, it was only the things that I heard from the slightly open doors when I was a child. Stories that are definitely not for children.
I saw them setting fire to the house and children jumping out of the windows and being thrown back in again and then running. I don't remember what happened next. I was in a state of shock. I just remember the screams, the fear and running with everyone else.
Bogusława Kędzierska is 91. She's remembering the year 1943, when she was 10. The same horrors that Karolina Romanowska, granddaughter of other survivors, heard about years later through those half-open doors.
I remember one auntie saying, it was a night, someone knocked to the door and shout, they have to go quick because they are going to kill them. They've been calling these killers UPA. I didn't know what does it mean even. Now I know that is how they call the Ukrainian army that was actually involved in these killings. It's UPA.
Ukrainian Insurgent Army.
Insurgent Army, yes. This massacre is probably one of the most unknown in the world. But this is my personal story. Hearing those stories of those survivors, something changed in me. These stories stayed with me forever.
You're listening to Assignment on the documentary from the BBC World Service. I'm Tim Hewell. And this is the story of how tens of thousands of Poles, some historians say 100,000, were murdered by Ukrainians in Wołyń, also known as Volhynia, and neighbouring areas that were then part of Poland, now in Ukraine, during the Second World War. The Polish Parliament calls it a genocide. Afterwards, the massacre was widely forgotten, except by survivors, amid all the other atrocities of those blood-drenched years. But now, suddenly, when Ukraine is again at war, this time strongly supported by Poland, the ghosts of the slaughtered have come back to haunt relations between the two neighbours and close allies.
Even after 80 years, they still cannot see our pain. This is why this subject now is everywhere. We want to bury our people. We just want to know those dead people have a place that maybe in the future, maybe someone can come and just put a candle just to remember.
Even after 80 years, most still lie in unmarked mass graves. A Ukrainian ban on reburials has just been lifted following heavy diplomatic pressure by Poland. But many Poles still don't believe they'll actually be able to lay grandparents to rest. because in Ukraine, now fighting for its existence against Russia, their murderers are widely commemorated as heroes.
You know, this war is a war for identity, and we fight for not having somebody making us to choose who are our heroes and so on. And when we hear Polish politicians say whom we cannot call our heroes, for example, for us it's not good, and we cannot trade our history and our identity.
We're on the edge here of a ploughed field, ringed all the way around the horizon by wintry bare forest. Here, in the middle of the field, is a single tree covered in yellow lichen. It's a lilac tree. In this whole empty landscape, this lilac bush, planted before the war, is the only thing that is left visibly from the village.
I ta figura Matki Bożej.
I'm with Polish historian Leon Popek. He's pointing to a lump of stone that's unrecognisable to me as the remains of a statue of the Mother of God.
There's a candle in a glass jar that Leon has just brought and lit at the foot of this Virgin without a head, without arms.
From the lost church of the lost pre-war Polish village of Ostrówki in what's now Ukraine.
10 metrów na lewą.
10 meters from here was the school. Over there was the church and the organ player's house.
Leon keeps bending down to examine another splinter of wood, shard of pottery, or twist of rusty metal poking out of the heavy charcoal grey clay soil.
To jest do wbijane i na tym były drzwi albo okno.
This is a door or a window hinge. It goes in the frame. So this is a hinge.
Basically, every single time the plough goes over this, it brings up more things of the life of this village that was here.
Wszystko zostało zniszczone.
Everything was destroyed within just a few hours on August 30th, 1943, by the Ukrainian insurgent army.
81 years ago.
Padają do każdego domu.
They enter each home. Wypędzają. They drag out or chase out the people and take everyone to the school building right there. Men, women, children.
Then they were led out 10 at a time to a nearby farmyard.
In the middle, there's a hole in the ground that's already been dug. They put them down, they kill them all with axes.
Among the victims were Leon's grandfather and other relatives.
I remember hearing this story since my youngest years, really. How my grandfather died, how my aunt died, and her children, and her husband, over 30 people. My family, they would get together and they would talk about it and why it had happened. Why and why and why.
Dlaczego, dlaczego, dlaczego?
I decided to study history and tell them why.
How many years ago was that?
46 lat temu.
46 years ago. Do you think you've found the answer to the question why?
Powiem tak.
Well, I'll tell you this. I have read hundreds, maybe thousands of books and articles about this. I have myself published over a dozen books and a couple hundred articles. But some questions still remain. And among them is the question why.
Why that boggy paradise of birds and flowers became a slaughterhouse? Before the Second World War, Volhynia was part of Poland. Then it was conquered in quick succession, first by the Soviet Union, then Nazi Germany. Most people there were Ukrainians. And amid the chaos of the wider war, a Ukrainian underground movement, the Ukrainian Insurgent Army, was fighting for an independent Ukrainian state. But why were so many Polish civilians massacred?
Perhaps I should tell you what was the logic behind this action.
Another Polish historian, Łukasz Adamski.
They wanted to have ethnically clean Ukraine, Western Ukraine, without those minorities like Poles, Russian and Jews, which Ukrainian nationalists affiliated with Ukrainian insurgent army identify those minorities as hostile.
They even murdered fellow Ukrainians who were friendly to Poles.
This is a small village in western Ukraine. A row of wooden cottages with corrugated iron roofs, painted bright colours, bright green, royal blue. And here at the end of the village, there's this huge, hulking ruin, a vast red brick, roofless Catholic church. We've come here with Ludmila Hirska. She's walking almost bent double on two walking sticks. Big, thick, black felt boots.
Мені 86 рік.
She's 86.
58 року.
Born in 1938. Well, you're walking very well. Ludmila's gone straight into the little graveyard to one of the graves. It's written in Polish. Regina Kowalska died tragically on the 11th of July 1943 in the church. Well, 83 human beings died near Równe Walce in an unequal struggle. She's weeping.
Regina, наша сусідка, діти пішли до костьола.
Regina was Ludmilla's neighbour. Ludmilla's family were Ukrainian, but that didn't save her grandparents on that midsummer day when the storks were cluttering on their messy nests, when her Polish neighbours were murdered at mass.
Прийшли до діда й до баби. Ви знаєте, чому ми до вас прийшли?
They came to my grandpa and they said, "Do you know why we came?"
А дід каже: "Не знаю."
And grandpa said to them, "No, say me." They said, "We came to shoot you."
Стріляти за поляків.
Because of Poles, because you are friends with Poles.
І бах.
And they shot grandpa and grandma, and that's how it was.
Не було ні сну, ні тільки один плач був.
And it was no sleep those nights, only crying and crying. And that's how they tried to build Ukraine. But is there any sense in this?
They were trying to build Ukraine. Who were they?
Киселинці були. Так Україну будували.
They were local from Kiselin, and that's how they tried to build Ukraine.
Двері такі були, Боже, Боже.
Banderas were such people.
Banderites, yeah.
Banderites, she calls them, supporters of Stepan Bandera, the leader of one branch of the far-right nationalist movement behind the Ukrainian insurgent army. More about him in a moment. But Ukrainian historian Volodymyr Vitrovich says we shouldn't just be talking about the insurgent army in the first place.
На мою думку, це була польсько-українська війна.
In my opinion, it was Polish-Ukrainian war.
Війна, яку почали підпільні рухи.
This war was started by underground movements from both sides, Ukrainian and Polish, but it ended up as kind of civilian war between different villages, different ethnic groups.
Масово вбивали, в тому числі цивільне населення.
He says Ukrainian peasants spontaneously attacked Polish neighbors after years of being treated as underdogs. And Poles retaliated, killing thousands of Ukrainians in return. There was no Volhynian massacre, according to this version of history, just a mutual bloodletting, a Volhynian tragedy.
Kind of typical example of this kind of anti-colonial war, for example, in Algiers or in Vietnam.
The leaders of the UPA, the Ukrainian insurgent army, are they heroes?
Yes, they sacrificed their lives for Ukraine, freedom and independence of country. I'm sure they can be called heroes.
All this isn't an abstruse historical argument, and it isn't just about relations between Poland and Ukraine. It's about Ukrainian identity today, because Bandera and the other Second World War nationalists are inspiring many Ukrainians now in another anti-colonial war against Russia.
Рівняйсь, струнко, Наша назва.
Безкорені.
Наше гасло.
Ми є славні українці від роду до роду. Ми команда безкорені в честь свого народу.
She gives this kind of military commands and then saying, stand up, stand straight, and so on.
In a small town in what was once the heartland of Polish Volhynia, a couple of dozen teenagers, boys and girls, are being put rather raggedly through their paces.
The soul is for God, life for Ukraine, and the honor for myself.
They're members of Jura, a youth movement that teaches survival skills, basic military training, and patriotism. Their leader, Lyudmila Kalish, says the Ukrainian insurgent army is their model.
All of them were fighting for Ukraine, and first there was oppression from Polish people, and then there was Soviet authorities, also a big oppression. And it's very actual now, restoring this spirit of fight, because there is a war happening with Russia, and many parents of our Jura children are fighting. Of course, it's the same struggle, just it's a modern version of the struggle.
In Poland, they say, oh, these people were war criminals.
В Польщі, можливо, воно було по-іншому різному, але чомусь саме...
Maybe in Poland there is a different view, but they wanted Ukraine to be free. That's why we appreciate them.
Very tall pine trees. Very, very quiet. And this big stone cross...
We are on the outskirts of the village, which was called Janowa Dolina. Now it's called Bazaltowe.
Polish historian Łukasz Adamski again.
Between 500 and 600 people died here. They could be impaled, hacked with axes, stabbed by knives, or simply burnt alive.
And the cruelty was intentional, to frighten.
Frightening other Polish people to move to the area which they consider to be a proper Poland.
But let me ask you, as a historian, firstly, how sure can we be that it was done by specifically the Ukrainian insurgent army? And secondly, how sure can we be historically that there was a plan to exterminate Polish civilians?
We don't have a written order with respect to the area where we are here, so in Volhynia. But we have certain order with respect to Eastern Galicia, another Ukrainian region where this massacre also took place in 1944. And then the commander-in-chief of Ukrainian insurgent army, Roman Shuhevich, gave the order stating that, firstly, you should encourage Poles to leave their houses and go to Poland, and then to kill.
And he uses the word kill.
Yes, he uses the word kill.
This is the documentary from the BBC World Service.
This week on Witness History, we're bringing you programmes about food. The dispute between Japan and South Korea over fermented cabbage. Christetta Comerford tells us how she became the first person of colour to be the top White House chef. And how Hollywood bigwigs mocking British food led to the creation of one of the most popular cookery programmes on the planet. Witness History, the podcast that takes you to amazing moments in history told through the eyes of the people who were there. Search and subscribe to Witness History wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
You're listening to Assignment with me, Tim Hewell. In Soviet times, before Ukraine became independent in 1991, the Ukrainian insurgent army and Stepan Bandera were officially demonized as Nazi collaborators. Again, the truth is very complicated. Second World War Ukrainian nationalists saw Germany, as well as Poland and the Soviet Union, as an enemy, and Hitler, in turn, felt threatened by them. Bandera was imprisoned by Germany during the war. But there were times when he and his followers tried to negotiate with the Nazi occupiers. And many Ukrainian nationalists eagerly helped the Nazis to murder Jews. Bandera himself was eventually killed in West Germany in 1959 by a KGB agent. And it was above all because of Bandera's anti-Soviet, anti-Russian credentials that when Ukrainians rose up against continuing Russian influence in their country in the massive street protests of 2014 on Maidan Square in Kyiv, some activists invoked his name.
Бандерівці! Вітаю вас!
One of driving forces at Maidan were far-right nationalists because they were very motivated. And radical nationalists were very often volunteers fighting against Russian mercenaries in Donbass. And then people who have a good contacts to various state structures who were quite influential came and started to promote vision of Ukraine which condemned every aspect of Soviet history. And they were, let's say, naive. They started to rename many streets in Ukraine. They replaced these communist heroes by nationalistic heroes, including people who were directly involved in mass massacres.
Kremlin propaganda has repeatedly referred to the glorification of Bandera to brand Ukraine as a Nazi state, Vladimir Putin's supposed justification for invading. And among Ukrainians themselves, attitudes to Bandera are sharply divided, a hero to some, a villain to others. But most have come to view him positively in recent years, thanks to promoters of national history, such as Volodymyr Vyatrovich. For 5 years, from 2014, he ran Ukraine's Institute of National Memory, helping to mould Ukrainians' view of their past. You've written and researched a great, great deal about this period. It isn't just Polish historians, it's a very large body of historians, Western historians, who've said basically, you are whitewashing war criminals.
But I also know that many of them receive money from Kremlin. They just repeat this Russian propaganda.
I mean, this is serious criticism, isn't it? The ideology of the OUN, which the UPA was the military wing of that, was for an ethnically pure Ukrainian state.
Ні, ні. Ні, не було такого. Немає документів, які говорять.
There are no documents saying that Ukrainian insurgent army is fighting for ethnically clean Ukrainian state.
Ви ж не перший журналіст західний, з яким...
You're not the first Western journalist who are talking to me about this, and usually they say, how you can glorify Bandera, he is a fascist. But I always ask, show me the document, show me the quotes that will show that he is a fascist. Nobody show it.
Ethnic cleansing wasn't the official policy of Bandera's organization. But it published instructions in 1941 that talk of cleansing the land from hostile elements and permitting ourselves to liquidate Polish, Muscovite and Jewish activists. But in Bazaltowe, the village I visited with Polish historian Łukasz Adamski, it's no secret that they meant all Poles.
Here, perpetrators did not hide who they are, so they were even proud that they did it.
Not far from the monument to the victims, there's another one that boasts about the killing.
There's a plaque, and I'm now reading here, on 23rd April 1943, soldiers of Ukrainian insurgent army liquidated one of the military bases of Polish-German occupiers in Volhynia. They glorify not only Ukrainian insurgent army, it is de facto a monument glorifying the massacre itself.
After the war, when Volhynia and other former eastern provinces of Poland were taken over by the Soviet Union, Polish survivors of the massacres moved into the new Polish state, whose borders were now much further west. Their descendants, a sizable proportion of the Polish population, including the composer Krzeszimir Dembski, who wrote this oratorio in their memory, watched with horror as the cult of Bandera developed on the other side of the border. They were shocked when the Ukrainian authorities, under the influence of the historian Volodymyr Wietrowicz, who's also a politician, banned all further exhumations of Polish burial sites in 2017. That was in retaliation, Ukraine said, for the failure to repair fully a damaged monument to Ukrainian nationalist fighters in Poland. But the row between the two countries only came to a head after Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine nearly 3 years ago.
Hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians came to Poland, and Polish people opened their hearts, their houses, and they started helping.
Karolina Romanowska.
It was not even a question. They are victims. This is what we have to do. We are neighbors. But very often, Polish people would ask Ukrainians, what do you think about Volynian massacre? We thought that Ukrainians will finally see our pain from the past. And then I realized that Ukrainians don't know anything about this.
Nie ma tam zupełnie nic. Pustka.
That's when Karolina started researching and campaigning. In a film widely viewed in Poland, she travelled to her grandfather's village in Ukraine, trying to find the graves of murdered relatives. Polish politicians took up the cause, and this autumn, as Poland prepared to take over the presidency of the European Union in January, they threatened to block Ukraine's steps towards accession unless the ban on exhumations was lifted. That threat, and perhaps a feeling in Ukraine after Donald Trump's victory in America, that it needed its European friends all the more, led finally last month to this announcement.
Ukraina potwierdza, że nie ma żadnych przeszkód do prowadzenia przez polskie instytucje.
Meeting his Ukrainian opposite number, Polish Foreign Minister Radek Sikorski declared that Ukraine would no longer oppose exhumations on its territory. Karolina's reaction?
Of course, I don't want to sound too skeptical, but till we start digging, I will not say that exhumations are unblocked. This is still only a declaration.
In Ukraine, the announcement was condemned by historian Volodymyr Wiatrowicz because nothing was said about restoring the Ukrainian fighters' memorial in Poland. And in any case, he wrote, no mass graves of Poles have been discovered in Volynia that can be exhumed. Of course, if you don't look, you won't find. And the looking, as Polish historian Leon Popek remembers from years ago, before the ban on exhumations, is terrifying. Eventually, he found his grandfather. He still finds it hard to talk about.
Ziemia, margiel.
You must understand, it's a soil, the dirt, you know, it's clay. Because of, you know, rains and water coming down, it fills up. It sort of surrounds the remains. And everyone is killed with blunt instrument. And the clay fills up every hole. And it creates like perfect molds. And when you remove it, it's perfectly maintained. So when I was there, I was in a state of shock.
Finding children, and many of the victims were children, was even worse.
Zwłaszcza, że po dzieciach tak naprawdę niewiele się zachował.
You know, there's hardly anything left of the small children. When you have a pit, the smallest children, the skeletons, I mean, they look like if someone had drawn something with a marker. But when you try to pick it up, it falls apart, it disappears. There's no way to pick it up because it's all dissolved. It turns into dust. So it's like a drawing.
Already traumatized, Leon was accused by some Ukrainian archaeologists of deliberately tampering with the remains.
Wyrzucili wszystkie kości i ta ekipa stwierdziła.
They took those little, the tiny bones, and they said that I had deliberately broken them into three parts, you know, to increase the number of the dead. And I said, would you do this to the bones of your grandfather? No, they said. Well, why do you accuse me of doing that?
We're taking out another candle holder, two jars
two
with...
Glass, one white and one red.
Oh, of course, for the Polish flag.
Yeah.
The winter light is fading as Leon pays his respects at one more mass grave. Dead leaves are thick on the ground. But suddenly, he starts talking about another time of year, the season that 91-year-old survivor Bogusława remembered so vividly at the beginning of this programme.
In the spring, it's full of cranes. They do their dances.
To jest trochę taka moja odskocznia.
It's a kind of a getaway from all this difficult topic. I can relax by just listening to birds. And, you know, here in the spring, you wake up, you know, 3:30 in the morning, they begin to sing. And those are concerts and you can't sleep.
Perhaps, when the cranes return next spring, reburials will have started in Ukraine. The row with Poland prompted the first detailed documentary on the massacres on Ukrainian TV, And Karolina hopes that as mines are opened, graves will be too. She's founded a reconciliation association that brings Ukrainians and Poles together to talk about the past. Will reopening the whole long-buried issue of 1940s atrocities simply serve the Kremlin's purpose? Karolina says no. When friends talk openly about a problem, their enemies can't use it against them.
If Ukraine is scared that touching the subject would question the heroes that they have from the Second World War, I really believe that they shouldn't, because they have now real heroes that are fighting for their freedom. And those heroes, I believe, that also wants Polish and Ukraine to be closer. This Wolyń massacre was a subject that was hidden, like, you know, in the closet. And if you have a skeleton in the cupboard for so long time and you think that it will disappear one day, you are wrong. I don't blame Ukrainians for what's happened. I have to work together with Ukrainians. If we will try to hide some part of the histories, that will not help us. That will only destroy us.
Thanks for listening. Assignment, Poland's Ghosts, Ukraine's Heroes, was produced and presented by me, Tim Huell, with production help and on-site translation by Grzegorz Sokół and Serhii Solodko, and additional research by Taras Szumejko. The songs were by Franciszka Bydychaj and Olga Kozioł and Anna Jurkiewicz of the Volinia in Song project. Sound mixing was by Rod Farker, the production coordinator was Gemma Ashman, and the editor, Penny Murphy.
This week on Witness History, we're bringing you programmes about food. The dispute between Japan and South Korea over fermented cabbage. Christetta Comerford tells us how she became the first person of colour to be the top White House chef. And how Hollywood bigwigs mocking British food led to the creation of one of the most popular cookery programmes on the planet. Witness History, the podcast that takes you to amazing moments in history told through the eyes of the people who were there. Search and subscribe to Witness History wherever you get your BBC podcasts.